ringing.
Come and get your gravy and two meatballs.
And bells will ring in every steeple.
Come and get the test on the movie screen.
Come, you three and your meatball people.
Come and get your beer and your Benzedrine.
Come and get it. Come and get it. Come.
There's gonna be a world shaking, red breaking day. Glory to you.
Can I get a waffle iron?
With your initials.
Hey, how about a jukebox?
Says here. Woody, can I get me a helicopter?
Helicopter?
Hallelujah.
On that great coming getting day.
On that great coming getting day.
My gown will be gown. My shoes will dance all over the town.
Oh, word has come from Gabriel Horn. The earth beneath your plow is budding and now it's yours.
For it's on, come and for it get. On that great way, come and get it. And keep it.
Washing machines, monogrammed waffle irons, jukeboxes, helicopters. It all comes true on that great Come and Get It Day, as sung by Ella Logan and the cast of Finian's Rainbow. Well, even though the plot may creak a little around the edges, I think that the music still remains as fresh and enchanting as ever. Time now to make some money for 3DB, after which I'll be back with a complete change of pace.
I'm Jeff Brady of Jeff Brady Motors, and I'm having a Sunday sale with a difference. No salespeople. That's right, this Sunday, a sale and no salespeople. Just come down and check out the huge savings on the whole range of new and used cars. All the prices are clearly marked for you to choose. Then, if you want to buy, the doors open at 7 a.m. Monday. So if you want to be a winner, make your choice on Sunday, come back and buy on Monday. Remember, we're up Springvale Road in Glen Waverley, right opposite the freeway entrance, and let me do it right for you, LMCT 1149.
Give yourself a burst of energy with ProLift, the all-Australian sports drink for people who work hard and play hard. It's the energy drink that tastes like refreshing fruit juice. ProLift is hypotonic. Most others are hypertonic. This means it's easily absorbed, while others have salt content higher than normal body fluids. Get a lift with ProLift, a scientific duplication of vitamins and simple carbohydrates. It's a fast and readily usable source of energy. ProLift, for active Australians, at all sports centres and milk bars.
You're listening to Thanks for the Memory.
Something completely different, and that something is Groucho Marx. Here's Groucho from a 1940s radio program in a sketch in which he plays an incurable hypochondriac.
Pardon me, is this the Bird's Eye Open House that advertises frozen? Boots? Uh-huh. And I presume you're Miss Dinah?
Sure.
Uh-huh. Then this is the program on which Mr. Groucho Marx is supposed to?
Supposed to what?
Uh-huh. Would you mind stepping aside so that I can spray the microphone?
No, oh, wait a minute. Now, wait.
Don't spray the microphone.
Stop this, my obese friend. Who are you?
My name is Amoeba J. Beck.
Tyria?
Uh-huh. I am Mr. Marx's personal disinfector, and I'm supposed to sterilize everything. You may not remember, but when Mr. Marx was here last time, he caught a very nasty...
Cold?
No, I'm just comfy. Now, if you'll excuse me, I have to spray the rest of this.
No, wait. Now, just a minute, Mr. Bacteria. I've got something to say about this.
Hello?
Hello, Dinah. This is Groucho. Did my personal disinfector get there yet?
Yes, Groucho, and I wish you'd come over and stop him. He's disinfecting everything in the studio.
Where is he now?
He's going around Harry Von Zell with a spray gun.
Well, that's quite a trip. You better get a road map. And tell him not to take Route 7. The bridge is out.
You better tell him that yourself.
I can. My bridge is out, too.
Mr. Bacteria, Mr. Marx wants to talk to you.
Thank you. Did you use this telephone to talk to Mr.
Marx?
Uh-huh. Excuse me.
Hello.
Hello.
Hello. Is this Mr. Bacteria?
You were expecting maybe Mrs.?
Did you take care of everything?
Uh-huh. And I figure it'll cost you exactly.
Well enough. I'll send you a check.
Just send it to.
It'll be a pleasure. I didn't know you moved.
I didn't move. They just changed the address.
Well, I don't want to get into an argument. I'll just drop it in the mailbox.
Which mailbox?
I don't care. Have you any favorites?
Oh, yes. Margaret O'Brien.
Ask her she's got a friend. I'll call you back in 12 years. Tell me sure. I'll be right over.
Just a playful little sprayful. That means I love...
Oh, isn't that...
Oh, now, please.
Dinah, listen, we've got to do something to get rid of that little bug killer.
I know it, Harry, but I'm not worrying about that so much. What we have to do is cure Groucho's complex. I wonder if I could use psychiatry on him.
Dinah, what do you know about psychiatry?
Well, I've seen all the latest movies, haven't I?
Well, now, just what will you do?
We'll just have to delve into his past and find out if anything ever happened in his childhood that might be troubling him now.
Oh, fat. How can you cure him now by finding out what happened to him when he was a kid?
Look, Harry, if Ingrid Bergman can cure Gregory Peck's brilliant mind, then I can certainly cure Groucho Marx's...
mind?
Oh, not at all. I'd love to.
What was that? Oh, hey, wait a minute. Here comes Groucho now. He's right behind Mr. Bacteria.
Company, halt! So far, so good, Bacteria. Now, are we ready to go on with the show? Very well. Hot water?
Hot.
Disinfecting soap?
Disinfecting.
Sanitary mask?
Sanitary.
Okay, Dinah, you may kiss me now.
Groucho, what on earth are you brushing off your suit that way?
James, millions of them. James with green heads, with blue heads, with red heads. Red heads? By the way, whatever happened to that little waitress at the Brown Davy?
Oh, you're just imagining all this, Groucho, but if you'll cooperate with me, I'm sure I can cure you.
Oh, now see how lucky you are. You now have a lady doctor.
Give that lady $10. What is my problem?
Your problem is that you're always brushing imaginary germs off your suit. Now, look, Groucho, just relax your mind and think of nothing.
How can I do that?
Well, try it this way. Think of a round circle.
But there's nothing inside of it.
That's it. Then your mind's a blank?
A complete blank?
It's a big improvement, too.
Bonzel, if my mind weren't a blank, I'd tell you where to get off. If I was running a bus.
Oh, boys, please, come on now. Don't interrupt the experiment. Groucho, are you thinking of a circle?
Yes.
Now think of an X.
I've got it.
Now a circle.
Go ahead.
Now an X.
Right.
Now a circle.
Hold it.
What happened?
I just beat myself at tic-tac-toe.
Groucho! That isn't what I mean at all, Groucho. Now please stop brushing those imaginary germs off your suits.
I can't help it. I can't help it. Mr. Bacteria.
Thank you very much.
Gosh almighty, he's really got it bad, hasn't he, Dinah?
Oh, I should say. Maybe I ought to try to analyze his dreams, Harry.
Dreams, that's right. Every dream has a hidden meaning, doesn't
yeah.
it?
Yeah. Groucho, what did you dream about last night?
Last night? I dreamed I was at the racetrack at Santa Anita.
Well, who did you bet on?
A horse, of course.
Well, who was the horse?
I was. Who'd you think was the horse? One of the horses?
Oh. Please forgive me, Groucho. It was a natural mistake. Imagine me thinking a horse is a horse. Silly. I suppose you were the jockey, too.
Of course I was. You don't think I let a stranger on my back?
You take him, Dinah.
Okay, Groucho, how could you be both horse and jockey?
It was a small dream. Everybody had to play two parts.
Look, have you had any other dreams where you weren't a horse?
Well, I dreamt I was a cow for 3 weeks, but it was too nerve-wracking. I couldn't get my pajamas over my horns.
Look, Groucho, you don't mind if we get this out of the barn, do you, Groucho? Have you had any beautiful dreams lately?
Yes, once I dreamt I dwelt in marble halls.
Oh, I wonder what that means.
I fell asleep in the bathtub.
Well, if you take him, Dinah.
Okay.
Well, wait till I get out of the tub.
Groucho, you know you should never fall asleep while you're taking a bath.
I wasn't taking a bath. I was just lying there thinking about it.
Groucho, look, concentrate.
It was my wedding, and they were giving me a shower.
Let's go into this just a little more deeply, can we?
Oh, wait till I turn out the water.
Do you have any dreams that occur frequently?
Yes, every night in my dreams, I come to a door with a big sign on it. Then I push it and push it with all my might, but it won't open.
Well, what does the sign say?
It says pull.
You take it.
Now I see the cause of your frustration. I see it all. You're trying to get back into your past, but you can't open the door to it. Now, do as I say, Groucho. Let's go back to your childhood.
Okay. I'll bank the eight ball in the side pocket.
No, no. I'm talking about another part of your childhood.
Okay. Shoot the
$20. I'll take 10 of it. Wait, no. You see, Dinah, it's no
ten
good.
Open here. 10 open.
Oh, stop. Don't you understand, Dinah? His mind is all cluttered up with the wrong things.
Just a second, my well-rounded, eager freezer. How did you spend your childhood?
Me? I lived in a little romantic town.
Really? Joe.
Yes, on cold winter nights when the moon was shining, the girls and boys would go down to the pond and we'd ice skate.
So far, nobody's made a buck.
You could make fun if you want to, but it was really wonderful. After a while, we'd go off in couples to the side of the lake and see who could freeze their spinach first. As a matter of fact, the winner was entitled to be called Birdseye for the rest of the week.
Now, you see?
That's beautiful.
You see, Groucho, that's exactly what I mean. Can you think of any outstanding incident in your youth?
Yes. It happened one night while I was taking a walk with my sweetheart and her boyfriend. At that time, we lived in a tough neighborhood. Nobody ever dared go near it until that fateful night.
Hey, fellas. Come on, let's take a walk over to the haunted house, hey?
Oh, boy, that's a swell idea. Hey, maybe we can find a couple of ghosts, huh?
Wow!
Boy, wouldn't it be wonderful if I could get my mother a sheet for her bed, huh? What do you say, huh, Marks? Huh, Marks, huh?
Personally, I'd rather get out of the drugstore and have a Coke.
A Coke? What fun is that? You can't get killed that way.
I can choke on a straw, can't I?
Oh, boy. Just listen to the wind whistle through that old haunted house.
There must be a sailor on the roof.
Don't be silly. What would a sailor be doing up there?
Why not? It's a tar roof. Some of those guys got shingles. I ain't going in that haunted house.
Now, wait a minute, Marks. You know we don't like sissies. Either you come on up with us or you'll get what you're looking for.
Since this was no place to get what I was looking for, we continued on our way up the hill. Then, in the eerie blackness of the night, I saw a white owl. Naturally, I picked it up and smoked it. It was the first time I'd ever smoked a cigar. And after two puffs, I realized I was a man. A sick man. Suddenly, there was a bolt of lightning.
Hey, Marks, where are you?
I'm over here, behind this tree.
Eh, what are you running away for? If lightning's gonna hit you, it's gonna hit you.
Well, if it's gonna hit me, at least let it look for me.
Wait a minute. You can't kid me, Marks. You're scared to death.
I am not. I always wear my hair straight up.
Hey, listen to that dog growling.
Yeah. Look, Marks, you go up there and take care of him.
Take care of him? I've got three uncles now I'm taking care of.
Now, don't worry about the dog growling. It just means he's smiling.
Yeah, the last time somebody told me that, a dog smiled right through the seat of my pants.
Just a minute, Groucho. I thought you said you'd face death for me.
Yeah, but that dog isn't dead.
Now listen to me, Marks. You know what I think of cowards. If you don't come along, I'll knock your ears off.
Since I didn't want my hat to fall down over my eyes, I continued with it. As we came to the door of the house, we sensed an odor of Limburger cheese. It had always been part of our neighborhood, but never as strong as this.
Stand back, everybody. I'm going to open that door.
Ooh, look at them big boxes in there, one on top of another.
I'll go in and open one of them. I'll prove to you that I'm not a coward.
My hero, what a man.
My friend, what a guy.
My goodness, what a smell. I was almost overpowered as I entered the old house. There was cheese to the left of me, cheese to the right of me. And there I stood, smellbound.
After that, there must be one more thing.
Finally, when I got outside, I found out that my loyal friends were halfway back to town.
What did you do?
I ran after them so fast that I became overheated and caught a bad cold.
Now, that's it. That's the answer. The memory of that cold is so unpleasant that it gave you a germ complex.
That's wonderful, Dinah. I'm so glad you cleared it up for me. I feel like a new man. It's great to be rid of those awful germs. And Harry... Harry, what are you doing?
Brushing these germs off my suit.
Hey!
Dinah, look, now Harry's got it.
Well, tell him to stop brushing them on me.
Oh, Mr. Bacteria, call a fellow bacteria.
Dear old Groucho Marx, telling us about how he became a hypochondriac. It's just after 5 minutes to eight on Melbourne's own 3DB, and you're listening to Thanks for the Memory, presented by yours truly, Bob Matchless. Dennis Day had a long career as a resident singer on Jack Benny's radio show, and he also cut a few records in his own right, one of which was this novelty Irish-type song, Clancy Low at the Boom.
Now Clancy was a peaceful man, if you know what I mean. The cops picked up the pieces after Clancy left the scene. He never looked for trouble, that's a fact you can assume. But nevertheless, when trouble would press, Clancy lowered the boom. Oh, that Clancy! Oh, that Clancy! Whenever they got his Irish up, Clancy lowered the boom. Boom, 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 boom. O'Leary was the fighting man, they all knew he was tough. He strutted round the neighborhood, shooting off his guff. He picked a fight with Clancy, then and there he sealed his doom. Before he could shout, "Oh, Larry, look out!" Clancy lowered the boom. Oh, that Clancy! Oh, that Clancy! Whenever they got his Irish up, Clancy lowered the boom. Boom, 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 boom. Now Clancy left the barber shop with tonic on his hair. He walked into the pool room and he met O'Reilly there. O'Reilly said, "For goodness sakes, now do I smell perfume?" Before you could stack your cue in the rack, Clancy lowered the boom. Oh, that Clancy! Oh, that Clancy! Whenever they got his Irish up, Clancy lowered the boom. Boom, 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 boom. Mulroney walked into the bar and ordered up a round. He left his drink to telephone and Clancy drank it down. Mulroney said, "Who drunk me drink? I lay him in his tomb." Before you could pat the top of your hat, Clancy lowered the boom. Oh, that Clancy! Oh, that Clancy! Whenever they got his Irish up, Clancy lowered the boom. Boom, 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 boom. O'Houlihan delivered ice to Mrs. Clancy's flat. He'd always linger for a while to talk of this and that. One day he kissed her just as Clancy walked into the room. Before you could say the time of the day, Clancy lowered the boom. Oh, that Clancy! Oh, that Clancy! Whenever they got his Irish up, Clancy lowered the boom. Boom, 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 boom. The neighbors all turned out for Kate O'Grady's wedding night. McDougal said, "Let's have some fun. I think I'll start a fight." He wrecked the hall, then kissed the bride and pulverized the groom. Then quick as a wink, before you could think, Clancy lowered the boom. Oh, that Clancy! Oh, that Clancy! Whenever they got his Irish up, Clancy lowered the boom. Oh, that Clancy! Oh, that Clancy! Whenever they got his Irish up, Clancy lowered the boom. Boom, 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 boom.
Sure, it was the most beautiful sight you ever did see when Clancy lowered the boom.
After the news, I'll be back with James Cagney playing George M. Cohan and George M. Cohan himself, plus our second part of the TV series and the history of the TV program, the history of television. We seem to have lost the picture, and I seem to have lost control. Thanks, Frank.
You're listening to Bob Matchless, and thanks for the memory.
Charles Collins. Federal opposition spokesman on education, Peter Shack, says greater flexibility in wage determination is essential for any substantial reduction of youth unemployment. Mr. Shack told the Young Liberals convention today that the government must recognise the link between youth wage levels and the high unemployment rate for 15 to 19-year-olds. He says the unions have turned a blind eye to the high awards causing unemployment problems for the young, and says the federal government is powerless to act without ACTU approval. Mr. Shack says thousands of young Australians are sacrificed to the dole queue for the sake of peace with the trade union bosses. The state government is to introduce legislation to protect Victorian travellers who lose money when travel agents go out of business. Consumer Affairs Minister Peter Spiker says the Travel Agents Act will include a compulsory licensing system and membership of a compensation fund which will cover all travel agents in participating states and territories. Mr. Spiker says all the required steps for the establishment of the fund are in hand and Victoria is waiting on the green light from the other Labor states. He says to become a member of the fund and obtain a licence, travel agents will have to prove a financial viability. The Bruce Ruxton Archbishop Tutu clash is far from forgotten in Melbourne. The Anglican Archbishop of Melbourne, Dr. David Penman, today bought into the argument, saying Mr. Ruxton's comments have hurt Australia's reputation internationally, attracting headlines in South Africa and other parts of the world. He says the RSL president's comments were unfair, unkind and ill-informed, and that the South African government would have been thrilled to bits by them. Dr. Penman says all people of goodwill, and particularly church members, should reject Mr. Ruxton's comments and should move to remove him from the position he holds with the RSL. Archbishop Tutu says he's deeply moved by the solidarity Melbourne's churches have shown in responding to Mr. Ruxton's comments. The federal government has announced grants for migrant welfare services amounting to $2.43 million. Immigration and Ethnic Affairs Minister says each grant will cover the cost of employing a specialist social or welfare worker who will help migrants and ethnic communities become self-reliant. The funding provides for 66 full grants and 15 half grants for the financial year. Prince Edward is due to announce tomorrow whether he'll stay in the Royal Marines or leave to pursue other interests. Linda Duffin reports from Britain that the nation's newspapers are wildly speculating on every possible outcome of tomorrow's announcement.
Time's running out for Edward, but with 56 million people hanging over his shoulder, he's not short of advice. The Sunday Telegraph's Simon O'Dwyer Russell was on the spot when he made his resignation threat. He's betting 70-30 the Prince will go, but says it's not because he's a royal wimp who can't stand the pace.
The flesh is fit and able, and the spirit is asking whether it wants to carry on doing.
Other pundits are predicting he'll stick it out, though, and one previously unknown model is claiming Prince Edward summoned her to the palace to cry on her shoulder, but she's left him to make up his own mind.
Tennis and six-seeded Zena Garrison has defeated Pam Shriver in straight sets 6-2, 6-4 to take the final of the Family Circle New South Wales Women's Open. Shriver was carrying a hamstring injury and Garrison made the most of it, forcing her all over the court. Garrison always looked as if she'd win and broke Shriver twice in the first set and once in the second. And finally to cricket, it's been a satisfying day for Australia in the fifth and final test at the SCG in Sydney. Resuming at 8 for 236, the Aussies took the score to 343 with the efforts of Dean Jones, who made 184 not out, with help from Peter Taylor and Merv Hughes. Then the Englishman came into bat and immediately collapsed to 3 for 17 before tee, finally being 5 for 132 at stumps. Finally to Melbourne's weather. Fine tomorrow, a mild and partly cloudy day with light to moderate west to southwest winds. An overnight low of 14 degrees up to a top tomorrow of 23 degrees. Currently in Melbourne, it's 19 degrees. I'm Charles Collins.
This has been 3DB Newsfront. Is Thanks for the Memory, and your host, Bob Matchless.
Thank you, Frank Mackay, for yet another sterling introduction. We're starting off this third hour tonight with a look back at one of the first great song and dance men in America, George M. Cohan, and the man who played him on the screen, James Cagney. You know, years before I even knew who Cohan was, I was familiar with the Cagney movie Yankee Doodle Dandy, simply because it was shown on TV many times in the early days. Now, when I grew up and started collecting records, I tried to find out a bit more about Cohan, what he looked like, what he sounded like, but that turned out to be no easy task, because George M. Cohan left behind precious few examples of his work. Basically, it consists of several scratchy 78s from the primitive days of recording, a few silent films, a couple of forgettable sound movies from the early 30s, and a handful of radio appearances. And it's only on radio and very late in the day, when Cohan was an old man, that we even get to hear him singing the songs with which he's most associated today. As most people's idea of Cohan is Cagney, I thought it might be interesting tonight to compare Cagney from the soundtrack with Cohan from the radio. So let's start off with an edited version of one of the big production numbers from the movie Yankee Doodle Boy. James Cagney and the cast, Yankee Doodle.
Kid, that's all the candy. I'm a Yankee Doodle Dandy. I'm glad I am. I'm a real life Yankee Doodle, made my name and fame and boodle just as Mr. Doodle did by riding on a pony. I love to listen to the Dixie strain. I long to see the girl I left behind me. That ain't a charge. She's a Yankee, by God. Anything about a Yankee, that's all for me.
Jones, a jockey from the USA.
We'll ride the pony Yankee Doodle English Derby Day.
Jonesy's broken records every track and every beat.
So Yankee Doodle's gonna be the boy they have to beat.
Sort of another pretty child who followed his career. Have offered Johnny anything to keep him over here.
But all the money in the Bank of England couldn't pay enough to keep young Johnny Jones away from old Broadway.
If you want to take a trip, assurance of sure thing.
Have your houses mortgaged, pop your watches, pawn your rings.
And put it all on Yankee Doodle, Johnny Jones is up.
I'm gonna give America the English Derby Cup.
He's gonna give America the English Derby Cup.
I'm a Yankee Doodle Dandy. Yankee Doodle, do or die. A real live nephew of my Uncle Sam, born on the 4th of July. I've got a Yankee Doodle sweetheart. She's my Yankee Doodle joy. Yankee Doodle came to London just to ride the ponies. I am that Yankee Doodle boy.
He's a Yankee Doodle man.
Come on, break away. They're showing them how to burn their hay. They're how to run. Hurry up, hurry up, hurry up. Show them a little speed.
He'll never win. He'll never win. The other nags are closing in. He's gone to first and second place.
It looks as though he's on the race.
It's got him in a pocket. He can't get in the clear. They're in the stretch. Here they come. He's falling to the rear.
He's lost the race, but it's a fright.
He'll find a blind, a rooster, blind and clear the name of little Johnny Jones.
That's it, ladies and gentlemen. It's all over. Yankee Doodle let him down. So they'll either pasture him in clover or have him hauling rubbish at London Town.
Goodbye, oh. Goodbye, Johnny.
Been dishonest, and we find that you be suspended for throwing a race.
I'm a Yankee Doodle Dandy. Yankee Doodle, do or die. Yankee Doodle came to London just to ride the ponies. I am that Yankee Doodle.
Cagney playing George M. Cohan in the soundtrack of Yankee Doodle Dandy. Now, here's Cohan himself singing the same song, Yankee Doodle Boy, and for good measure, You're a Grand Old Flag. Now, remember, when you hear these recordings, that Cohan is quite old and not in the best of health. Ladies and gentlemen, George M. Cohan.
I'm a Yankee Doodle Dandy. Real-life nephew of my Uncle Sam, born on the 4th of July. I've got a Yankee Doodle sweetheart, she's my Yankee Doodle joy. Yankee Doodle came to town to ride the ponies, I'm the Yankee Doodle boy. You're a grand old flag, you're a high-flying flag, forever it keeps fade away. You're the emblem of the land I love, the home of the free and the brave. Every heart beats true under red, white, and blue, where there's never a boast or brag. But should old acquaintance be forgot, keep your eye on the grand old flag.
I know that, Lord.
On Melbourne's own 3DB, the time is 14 minutes after 8. And you're listening to Thanks for the Memory, presented by yours truly, Bob Matchless. And that was George M. Cohan, the original George M. Cohan, with Yankee Doodle Boy and You're a Grand Old Flag. For some reason, Cohan only ever entered the recording studio once, way, way back in 1911. And the records he made of the songs are songs which he must have thought were pretty good then, but are pretty hard to listen to today. Certainly, they're none of the songs chosen for the movie Yankee Doodle Dandy. Well, a minute ago, we heard George M. singing You're a Grand Old Flag. Now, here's how Cagney tackles the same song in the movie.
Reeling when I listen to the music of a military band. Every tune like Yankee Doodle simply sets me off my noodle. It's that patriotic something that no one can understand. Melody untiring, it's so inspiring. And that's going some for the Yankees by gum, red, white, and blue. I am for you. Honest, you're a grand old flag.
You're a grand old flag, you're a high-flying flag, and whatever is peace may you wave. You're the emblem of the land I love, the home of the free and the brave. Every heart beats true under red, white, and blue, where there's never a boast or brag. But should old acquaintance be forgot, keep your eye on that grand old flag.
We took the red from the flame of dawn, the dawn of a new nation, and the white was the white of the snow at Ballyfawn. The blue was the blue of the free, open sky, and the stars were the 13 sisters by the sea who built their home and called it liberty. Right! Right again!
Great crowd pleaser. You're a grand old flag. From the soundtrack of Yankee Doodle Dandy. After this next break, I'll be back with the most enduring song that George M. Cohan ever wrote.
Summer. Keep summer beautiful and you'll keep Australia beautiful too.
We gotta keep summer beautiful. Keep summer.
You're listening to Thanks for the Memory.
George M. Cohan appeared in several silent films, although I've not heard of any being available through the usual sources today. The best known is Seven Keys to Baldpate in 1917 and Hit the Trail Holiday the following year. He made just two talkies, The Phantom President in 1932 and Gambling in 1934. The former was shown by the BBC in London a couple of years back and reveals that Cohan wasn't too bad as a film personality. However, I understand that neither of the films was a great success and that Cohan didn't enjoy the experience all that much. So that was the end of that. Here's George again, once again from a late radio broadcast, singing one of the most enduring songs he ever wrote. Give my regards to Broadway.
Did you ever see two Yankees part upon a foreign shore? When the good ship is just about to start for old New York once more. the tear-dimmed eye says goodbye. They're friends without a doubt. And the man on the pier shouts loud and clear as the ship strikes out. Give my regards to Broadway, Herald Square. Tell all the boys at 42nd Street that I will soon be there. Whisper of how I'm yearning to mingle with the old-time throng. Give my regards to all Broadway and say that I'll be there there long.
George M. Cohan, give my regards to Broadway. And that takes the time on Melbourne's own 3DB to 21 minutes after 8 o'clock. Now, here's how Cagney tackles the very same song, once again from the soundtrack of Yankee Doodle Dandy.
Regards to Broadway. Remember me to Herald Square. Tell all the gang at 42nd Street, and I will soon be there. Whisper of how I'm yearning to mingle with that old-time throng. Give my regards to old Broadway and say that I'll be there ere long.
Give your regards to Broadway. Remember you to
Broadway, as only James Cagney could sing it. Well, what do you think? Does Cagney sound like Cohan, or for that matter, does Cohan sound like Cagney? Well, here's one more example to help you make up your mind, and it's one of the most famous songs to come out of World War One. In fact, Cohan was awarded the Congressional Medal of Honor by Franklin D. Roosevelt for the morale-boosting value of this song, Over There. Here's how Cagney delivers it, assisted by Francis Langford.
your gun, get your gun.
Take it on the run, on the run, on the run. Hear them calling, you and me.
Every son of liberty.
Hurry right away, no delay, go today.
Make your daddy glad you have had such a lad. And your sweetheart not too fun.
To be proud, proud boys in line.
Over there, over there. Send the word, send the word over there. That the Yanks are coming, the Yanks are coming. The drums are coming everywhere. So prepare, say a prayer. Send the word, send the word to beware. We'll be over, we're coming over. And we won't come back till it's over. Over there, over there, over there. Send the word, send the word over there.
Pick it up, 40, soldier. Keep singing, Nora. Where the lights?
Oh, I suppose the generator's gone again.
So we can keep going, will you?
All right.
That's fine. Thanks.
Switch.
Hey, boys, hit your lights. Keep them on the thing until the others come up, will you? That's fine. Thanks very much.
Let the Yanks are coming. The Yanks are coming.
Get those eyes.
Where'd you get them?
Won't you put me wise?
Don't you die, man.
Pay to advertise.
Tell them about it.
Where did you get those eyes?
Paul Whiteman and his orchestra with Jack Teagarden on the vocal and Jeepers Creepers. I'll be back after this next break with Hoagie Carmichael.
Hi, I'm Jeff Brady of Jeff Brady Motors, and I'm having a Sunday sale with a difference. No salespeople. That's right, this Sunday, a sale and no salespeople. Just come down and check out the huge savings on the whole range of new and used cars. All the prices are clearly marked for you to choose. Then, if you want to buy, the doors open at 7 a.m. Monday. So if you want to be a winner, make your choice on Sunday, come back and buy on Monday. Remember, we're up Springvale Road in Glen Waverley, right opposite the freeway entrance, and let me do it right for you, LMCT 1149.
Come along and join in the fun at Anderson's Mulgrave store. Bring the kids and say hello to Zig and Zag. Enjoy a free cup of coffee and save on famous brands this Monday at Anderson's Family Fair opposite Brandon Park. To celebrate, Anderson's are offering special prices on famous brands. Moran, Parker, Tessa, Chiswell and Module. This is your chance to own the furniture you've always wanted. So come along to Anderson's Furniture at Mulgrave opposite Brandon Park this Monday and save at Anderson's Family Fair.
You're listening to Thanks for the Memory. On Melbourne's own 3DB, the time is 19 minutes to 9. Now, here's a man who often recorded his own songs, Hoagie Carmichael, and what great songs they were. Here's Hoags now, doing justice to one of his most famous numbers, Georgia on My Mind.
Georgia, Georgia, the whole day through, just an old sweet song keeps Georgia on my mind, Georgia on my mind. Each day, Georgia, a song of you comes as sweet and clear as moonlight through the pines. Other arms reach out to me, other eyes smile tenderly, still in peaceful dreams I see, the road leads back to you, my beautiful Georgia. Georgia, no peace I find, just an old sweet song keeps Georgia on my mind. Georgia, Georgia, no peace I find. Just an old sweet song keeps Georgia on my mind.
Just an old sweet song keeps Georgia on my mind. Hoagy Carmichael. By the way, did you see Hoagy featuring the movie The Best Years of Our Lives on TV a couple of weeks back? He wasn't a great actor by any means, but a very likable personality. Well, time now on Melbourne's own 3DB is 8:45. Time for episode 2 in our history of the early days of television from the BBC, presented by John Bird. We seem to have lost the picture.
By the time television arrived, the men at the BBC already had a great tradition behind them. That was enough. They were ready.
We had had no experience of any kind. Nobody had. We didn't know how to put the lights. We didn't know what the cameras could do. We'd never seen a fade or a mix. We really knew nothing.
Cecil Madden, the producer of the very first BBC TV programme to go on the air, 26th of August, 1936. He had the title of programme organiser. His show came live from the Radio Olympia exhibition, and the sheer quality of the cast list speaks for itself. The Three Admirals, the Griffiths Brothers and Miss Lutie, and Pogo the Performing Horse. Not surprisingly, perhaps, BBC TV closed down immediately, and didn't reopen until the next very first programme, with Buck and Bubbles, if you recall. Not only were we the first country to have the first television programme in the world, we also had at least 5 first television programmes in the world. But that didn't mean there weren't any problems. As Gerald Cock, director of television, points out, there were 1 or 2 quite big ones.
There were several problems involved in the choice of material which would be likely to sell sets. You cannot imagine the problem when there was no audience at all. Nobody had bought a television set and we had to go on.
Ah, well, yes. No audience. I see. Forgotten about the damned audience. Surely somebody should have sent somebody a memo about this. In fact, people tended to be wary of television. Most of them had no conception of what it could possibly be like, except the very few who had seen the early 1929 test transmissions, and they were the wariest of the lot, not without reason. In 1935, the year before the service was inaugurated, the then Postmaster General, Sir Kingsley Wood, gave a radio broadcast announcing its official setting up. It's an interesting document, this broadcast, because he had to spend a lot of time allaying people's fears about television, fears which now seem absurd to us.
You will be glad to know that there is no suggestion of an increase in the 10-shilling fee for the broadcast listener's license.
And there were, however, people whose tastes in uneasiness were more sophisticated.
I understand that among the letters received by the television committee during its investigations was one protesting against the invasion of the privacy of the writer's home by television, which it was suggested would make it possible for the outside world surreptitiously to witness what was going on inside the house. I would like to reassure any nervous listeners that wonderful as television may be, it cannot fortunately be used in this way.
Did he say fortunately or unfortunately? All the Postmaster General's men, indeed. It looked like Kingsley Wood's reassurances weren't reassuring enough. There we were, blinded performers who kept falling over, producers who didn't know anything, catatonic engineers, and Gerald Cock with more speeding tickets than viewers. They had to find an audience, or anyway, they had to sell sets. How, though? Well, one thing they tried was television by radio. Not Logie Baird's buzzsaw brain damager, but a technique whereby a commentator, preferably John Snagg, went on the radio and flatly described a television show as it was going out. This, mixed in with some fairly blatant hard-sell advertising for the retail wireless trade, was supposed to tantalise the prospective viewer until he could bear it no more and rushed out to the nearest television dealer, who wasn't very near, usually. They even took listeners behind the scenes in the studio, the more to entrance him by the magic of it all. Here's Snagg doing his come-on number, though at times he can barely disguise his personal distaste for the ghastly new medium.
From here, I don't hear very much. But I'm going to go through to the control room where we'll get what sound there is and what viewers are actually hearing. But in the meantime, I'll just go and describe what that looks like. Now, I'm going through to the control room. Well, the control room itself is in semi-darkness. It's in semi-darkness, and all those working in it wear white coats. White coats so they can see each other in this rather gloomy atmosphere almost. And meantime, I can hear the loudspeaker going in the background, which is the actual sound of television. Well, now, whilst I'm going upstairs, I've got to climb a rather steep ladder up to the producer. I can hear him talking way up there. And while I'm doing that, I'm going to let you hear exactly what viewers themselves are hearing on their own program.
Yes, they're just fitting in the pin now, preparatory to winding the wheels up onto the davits now. They've lowered the whole chassis down onto the ground, and the weight of the gun is being taken by its body.
What about the height at which you can hit with any certainty?
It will shoot up to rather over 30,000 feet.
Which is in miles?
Which in miles is about six.
6 miles high, it's pretty good shooting.
Well, now, that's what they're hearing. I dare say it sounds a little difficult for you to understand, but then you must remember that to understand it really properly, if you're not an anti-aircraft man yourself, you've got to have a television set to see what they're talking about.
Well, I dare say that did wonders for anti-aircraft recruitment, but I shouldn't think it sold too many TV sets. So for Gerald Cock, there was only one possible solution, even though it did involve something essentially alien to the whole spirit of the BBC.
So we had to invent publicity stunts, if you like to call it that. Although it rather jarred us, it did me certainly, to make publicity matter of things like Jasmine Bly and Elizabeth Cowell.
Things? What do you mean, things? Elizabeth Cowell wasn't a thing. She was an absolute knockout. The first girl announcer on television. The BBC was transformed overnight. You wouldn't have recognized it. The programme schedules looked like they'd been drawn up by the Marquis de Sade. And as for Miss Cowell, she was just downright inflammatory.
Good evening, everyone. There are three main items in our programme tonight. A new review called Fun and Games, another edition of our weekly topical magazine picture page, and at 10 o'clock we have an outside broadcast of boxing from the concert hall at Alexandra Palace. And now, ladies and gentlemen, for Fun and Games.
Fun and Games, I can imagine. Well, that did it. They got the press in, and, well, you know what the press are like.
The press took it off.
Took what off? Where was Lord Reith while all this was going on?
The press took it off. See, they took these two lovely wenches and worked it up into the press, and people bought, I think, bought receivers, partly to see these two females.
So there it is. The BBC television service, as we know it today, was founded on what? Sheer, unbridled, ravaging, ravenous, rampaging, rampant sex. In a word, well, of course it worked. It always does. The BBC engineers, stern, unbending moralists to a man, of course they didn't like it, but what could they do?
Here is a special announcement. For various reasons outside the control of the BBC, the picture sometimes deteriorates to such an extent that it cannot be rebroadcast. When this happens, we fade out the picture completely and replace it on your screens with a local test signal, which appears as a vertical white bar.
Yes, they tried hard, but the jig was up. They were fighting a losing battle.
There are also occasions when the picture falls below standard, but is not poor enough to switch off altogether. In these circumstances, radiate the white bar for 2 seconds every 3 minutes.
You'd think somebody would have taken a hint like that, but no. The program producers at the BBC were already operating a principle which is still much followed today.
The moment we'd learned something, we abolished it instantly.
So the engineers, in their turn, established a working relationship with the program men, based on the phrase, which is always spoken in a tone of weary but patient regret, "Well, if that's really what you want, I can do it for you." And besides, they had their hands full coping with the new flood of interest from the public. In those days, there was the problem of transmitter range. Most people had to go a long way for a glimpse of the little grey screen. Sir Kingsley Wood in 1935.
There will at first be one station,
located in London, which is expected to have an average range of about 25 miles in any direction.
25 miles. It doesn't sound much, but at the time it was a great step. 10 months later, television was on the air. By that time, there were already new developments. The chairman of the Television Advisory Committee, Lord Selsdon himself.
Roughly speaking, it will cover a radius of more than 20 miles.
More than 20 miles? That's less than 5 miles less than they said before, more or less. And there's more to it than that.
There may be some surprising extensions. For instance, I should be unwilling to lay heavy odds against a resident in Hindhead viewing the coronation procession.
Now, what did he mean by that, Lord Selsdon? Did he give you, say, 5-1 or 9-2? Who was that mysterious resident of Hindhead? That woman from the big new house calls herself Pickerswell, but bears a striking resemblance to Lady Selsdon, the one who's always nagging her husband about taking her to the coronation. The real truth may never be known. But that was another turning point. Well, you know what they say. Today, Hindhead, tomorrow, the world. Gossipy lot. All over the country, people were demanding their own television service. The BBC were caught off guard completely. What were they to do? They'd had months, years even, of research and experiment into television, staggering technical complexities, and they'd come up with some of the answers.
As for the future, we know already that television is much more complicated than sound broadcasting.
But was that enough? Well, only 16 years later, triumph. How did they do it?
Tonight is a great night for us in television, because this evening I'm speaking to you not from the familiar studios in London, but from a studio in Edinburgh. And so it is with great pleasure that I hand you over now to my fellow Scot, chief announcer of the BBC Scottish region, Alistair McIntyre.
In a few moments, in this studio, which has been specially equipped with television cameras for the occasion...
So that was it. Cameras, that was a trick. Putting cameras in the studio. A knighthood for the man who thought of that one, thank you.
And that, for this week, is where we'll leave this tongue-in-cheek history of television, which I hope you're enjoying. Personally, I think it's very cleverly written and very well put together. And that takes me out for another Sunday. I hope you've enjoyed the nostalgia, and that you can join us again next Sunday evening at 6 o'clock. Thanks to Frank Mackay for his sterling work on the turntable, and thank you at home for listening. And of course, to all those artists whose records we featured this evening, this is Bob Matchler saying thanks for the memory.
Listening to Bob Matchless and Thanks for the Memory. Stand by now for Father Gerard Dowling and the Family Counselor program, right after Charles and the News at 9.